Networking and marketing made simple is for you, the business owner that has a product, service, or message that you truly believe in. My name is Scott Aaron, and each week we'll take a behind-the-scenes look at real-world networking and marketing tactics while leveraging LinkedIn to get what you have in front of many more people. Thanks for spending time with me, and let's get started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another dual episode of Networking and Marketing Made Simple and the Entrepreneur Rescue Mission. This is Scott Aaron along with...
Nancy
Evans. Who?
Nancy Evans.
Nancy Evans Aaron. Anyway, first, before we get into today's episode, which you've read the description, this is the cornerstones of the Feel Good business model. We're happy to announce that Nancy and I, some of you have may seen us post about this on social media, that Nancy and I are in the final stages of releasing our first co-authored book called, drum roll please, The Feel Good Business Model. And this book is literally our, I would say, life's business work.
Like our opus. It's like our,
Everything that we've done from A to Z to scale our business, to grow our business, to only having to work 3 days a week, and you know, just everything that is going on behind the scenes that, you know, people see certain things on social media, but people want to know the inner workings. And we decided to have a very audacious goal. I basically said to Nancy at the beginning of February, and at the time you're listening to this, it's obviously March. I said to Nancy, I said, you know what, let's really dig in and let's bang out this book. Like, let's spend the next 30 days. We'll take a little bit of time each day and we'll co-write it together. And we did. So there is a wait list. So as we've done before, there is going to be a book release week. It actually will drop on Tuesday, March 26th, and it will be available at discounted pricing all that week through that Sunday. So there'll be, I believe that the Kindle pricing is going to be 99 cents. The book is going to be, you know, anywhere between $18 to $20 normally, but it's are actually going to make it 75% off that whole first week. So we're doing a contest. Anyone that buys the book, leaves us an honest rating and review after they purchase, we're going to be giving away some great prizes, which we will announce. So if you want to be one of the first ones to get your hands on this brand new book called The Feel Good Business Model, it's our first co-authored book together. We will leave a link to get on the wait list in the description of this episode, the show notes, and the email, obviously, that you received to listen to this. So we'll wrap the episode up and remind you one more time, but we just wanted to kind of get ahead of it and let you know that's what's going on. So in today's episode, we're going to talk about the cornerstones of the Feel Good business model, because a lot of people are like, well, what is that? You know, is that something that you guys coined? Is that something that you made up? Not necessarily. I would say the overall tone and the overarching message of a feel-good business could mean different things to different people. But I would say that there's some core elements that make it a feel-good business, and that's what we're going to talk about today. So Nance, let's dive into what the cornerstones of what a feel-good business actually is.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, this, like Scott said, is obviously such a big topic that is so near and dear, you know, to our heart, just because, you know, rewind our story. And of course, you know, as we kind of release these episodes close to the book release, we're going to share a little bit more of our why and, you know, why this all came about. And I think that's really important because, you know, there's so many different ways to build a business. Right. You know, you can build a traditional model, you can do a brick and mortar, and you can, you know, do all different kinds. And I think it's so fun to hear it from our perspective, you know, in all honesty, as I was kind of putting some things together, because we've done it all. Right. You know, Scott used to run brick and mortar businesses. I had a service business, you know, remotely run house cleaning business, and then an agency. And, you know, we've run so many different types of businesses at this point that we really have experience in a lot of different ways of doing it. And the concept of the feel good business model, where it might not be new, right? You know, in fact, a lot of my research, in fact, the first article that I can find it even being mentioned was in a Forbes article about 2016, where they started talking about this idea, you know, of a business model that actually is built around feeling good. And it's funny because there is a common misconception. Like, I don't want you thinking like, okay, every single day is sunshine and rainbows. No, it's not. You know, that's not the point. It's that we are building it though to really create a business and create a framework and a structure that gives us, you know, all those other things in life that are so important. It's not just money, right? You know, it gives us time. It gives us flexibility. It gives us less stress, right? Less to manage and deal with. So that's what we're really going to get into, you know, as Scott mentioned today. We're going to talk a little bit about what the heck the Feel Good business model is. And we're going to talk a little bit about the cornerstones, right? What are those key pillar things that we really kind of really focus on, right? When we teach it and we share about it. So kicking it off, you know, what is the Feel Good business model in general? And Scott, you're a little foggy. Just, I don't know if it's on my end. But anyway, when we talk about the Feel Good business model, as opposed to other types of business models, a feel-good business model really prioritizes certain things over others, right? You know, we've been a part of, in fact, masterminds and a lot of programs. And I'm just using coaching and consulting as an example, or someone who might have a service-based business. A lot of the masterminds that we were a part of were in that put your head down, spend a ton of money, let's build and grow this thing to multi-million dollar conglomerates, you know, like huge businesses. Let's hire 20 team members, you know, let's really blow this thing out of the water. The problem with that, though, is we were kind of looking around and we were going, we don't really want to manage a big team, maybe a small team, but we don't want to manage a huge team. And number two, we were seeing people left and right jump the, you know, kind of get ahead of themselves. And before they were even bringing in enough money, they had about 20 team members that were literally sucking up all, you know, the income. And really the margins were very, very tiny. Scott, you look like you want to say something.
Well, no, I think you hit the nail right on the head. So people weren't blowing it out of the water. They were blowing all their money. That's yes. What it was. And I mean, we heard horror story after horror story of people following this business model when they were not ready for it. And they brought on all these team members, they hired employees, and they had to fire everyone after a year because their profit margin was like basically nothing. They weren't even breaking even. They were in the negative.
And so, on the outside, right, they're looking like, wow, I just had this and that. And you guys,
oh, I hired this person. We hired this person. No idea. Like, just because you're hiring someone doesn't mean that you're profitable. That's again, there is a right and wrong time to make a hire. And sometimes you have to build to scale. And the best way to build to scale is slow and steady will win the race, because there are things that you have to work out and work through with the inception or the first 3 years of your business. Nance, what was the stat that you told me the other day with coaching and consulting, the percentage of the coaches and consultants that actually fail within the first
2 years?
Yeah, it's
over 81%.
81%. Sad. Yeah. I mean, but it could be prevented, and that's why we're doing this episode.
Yeah. So, you know, here's the thing. And even before I get into the cornerstones, in fact, this is one that I didn't really highlight, which I'm going to be adding that, you know, to my notes. But, you know, one thing that I will hang my hat on every single day, and guys, you will hear so many conflicting opinions about this. The type of business model that we're going to really get into and that we're going to talk about, in fact, it's funny, we used to call it the small and mighty business model, but really the feel good business model, right? That whole concept, you know, because you can grow it as big or as small as you want, right? It doesn't mean you just have to have, you know, three team members or four. You can grow it and grow it and grow it. It's really just behind the core mission of it all, right? You know, how much you want to grow it, what kind of boundaries you want to have in place, and so on and so forth. So, you know, one thing, again, before we get into the cornerstones that is such a big lesson for me, guys, I rewind back to my first mentor. I hired a mentor from score.org, from the Small Business Association, and it was a gentleman who ran a multi-million dollar business, and you know, he was very successful and he knew how to build and grow businesses from scratch. And whenever I was starting my business, which was a house cleaning business, he said, you have to get your hands dirty. He said, you've got to know the inner workings and the ins and outs of your business, because if you don't, your hands will be tied and it will be so much harder. It will be such a bigger uphill battle. So how I relate this to you guys, and especially for coaches, consultants, people building online service businesses, I hear it all the time. People who have quite a bit of money, right? Startup capital, say, yeah, just go pay an agency, right? To go build out all those things for you, right? Go get your website built. Go get your, you know, this built. Go get your funnel created. I cannot reiterate this enough. And in fact, Brendon Burchard even did a huge episode. It was, you know, five big things. And he talked about his huge life lessons that he learned. He said, when people don't take the time to learn their own tech and their own, you know, what it takes to actually build their business, you are so less empowered to run your business. You are panicking, right? Whenever you're not able to jump in and make a tweak or an adjustment, you know, during a launch or during something, because maybe someone else set it up and you don't know what the heck you're doing. If you don't know the basics of all those different things, and I'm not saying you have to eat, sleep, and breathe it. You can have a team that helps you. But if you don't know how to go in there and make minor updates and edits, or at least have whoever set it up walk you through it so that you know and that you're empowered to make changes, it's going to keep you held back. Okay. So again, you're going to hear from a lot of people. In fact, I saw a post the other day, oh, unpopular opinion, you know, you need to just hire everybody to do everything for you and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, no, like, I think you need to know and you need to learn the basics.
Scott? Yeah. Something interesting that people may not know about me, and Nancy will tell you this, I love, love scheduling the emails for our workshops.
Yeah. I'm so glad you do.
I do. I love it.
I'm so glad you
because
do.
Because again, like, I know the tone of voice that is myself and Nancy, and I know how our audience likes being connected with. And once you have the foundations, once you've done one workshop, you have the templates right there that you can just repurpose and reuse, and you just change verbiage, you change the links. And I think for me, it's also the potential ROI aspect, because I know that when I schedule these emails out and they're just set it and forget it and it leads to registrations, then I know that's going to lead to sales in our business. And that's the thing, you know, we have everything as a well-oiled machine. So when we go in and we're in workshop mode, I have all the emails ready to be set up for, you know, before day one, the replay emails, like it's fun. I know that sounds weird to some people, but I don't even see at this point as getting my hands dirty. It's just empowering to know that even if I'm traveling and, you know, Nancy's home and I'm doing a keynote somewhere, I can always log onto my laptop, you know, log into Kajabi and do some stuff. Like, and it takes me like little to no time at all. And I enjoy it because it's obviously leading to growth in our business.
Yeah. Well, and just to share, you know, again, a little behind the scenes, you know, I used to do a lot of work with coaches and, you know, high level consultants who had been in business for years. And, you know, one of them had actually hired an agency to help them out with, you know, some email sequence and with their sales funnel. And I remember that huge marketing company said, I need you to help write these emails because this is your voice. And the person at the time is like, no, you write them. And it's like, no, it's important that you are involved in this because it is personal, right? You know, you want to connect with people. So if you find yourself going, I don't want to touch it, please set aside some time, right? Even if it's an hour to 2 hours, just to learn the basics. You know, and the cool thing nowadays is they're getting so solid with tech and so many different pieces of software and tools that you really can learn so much in a short period of time. So don't be afraid. All right. So let's talk about the cornerstones. All right. So the cornerstones of the Feel Good business model really rely on a few different things. So we're going to go over, I think there's about five of them. But the first one, and we already touched on this, is focus on the margins, not just the volume, right? And, you know, I go back to a quote by Warren Buffett. He said, you know, I love businesses that are high margin, right? That was just his number one rule is, you know, if you can find a business or run a business with high margin, that's great, right? Because you can look and on the surface, in fact, we talk about this all the time. Scott and I will be at a restaurant, you know, or we'll be somewhere and we're like, I wonder what the margins are here. Because you would think, oh my goodness, they're crushing it. They're amazing. Guys, think about how much goes into running certain businesses, hiring a team, having food, having all that overhead, having the building, you know, having the marketing, like all the things that go into it. And at the end of the day, what does that margin really look like? So it's really finding those sweet spots and finding a type of business model, right? Like the feel good business model that really hones in and focuses on the necessities, right? We're not going to get a bunch of stuff that is going to be fluffy and add additional expenses. You know, we're going to keep it nice and tight. I'm all about, in fact, you know, a lot of things that I teach and a lot of the tips you'll see in the book are kind of bootstrapping, right? You know, how can we do things either free or at a very low cost, right? We've joined programs where they've immediately said, now sign up for this $600 a month service, or now sign up for this $1,000, whatever. We're not about that life, right? We're about keeping our margins really high so there's more money coming in so that we can do other things, whether it be donate money, whether it be have more money for us, pay our team, so on and so forth.
Yep. So before we get to number two, let me just say this. Nancy and I pride ourselves on having a business that runs anywhere between a 70 to 80% profit margin and teaching other people how to do the same thing. Because what we want to debunk is this. You know, you may see someone say, oh, I have a, you know, I made seven figures this year. Now, and it's funny, Nancy and I saw a post a few months back of someone that said, oh my God, you know, I just hit 30% profit margin for the first time in my business. And I'm not saying that 30% profit margin is bad, but that's slow. That means 70% are expenses. And if something doesn't really shift, it's not going to be good. So just to kind of quantify that, for every $1 million that business makes at a 30% profit margin, they're making $300,000. So expenses are $700,000 and profit is $300,000. Now, that is before taxes. So depending upon, you know, quarterly tax payments, this, that, or the other, you can almost automatically deduct another 35 to 40%. So now you're looking at an additional anywhere between $90,000 to $120,000 coming off the top of that, which leaves you with about $180,000 profit. So that $1 million business that someone says they have is really paying out $820,000. So outside looking in, it may seem like the person has a profitable business. The company is profiting, but the individual who's running the business, the question is, are they profitable? And that's the thing. You want to be in as much control of that business as possible. So just understand, profit margins are key. If you are taking in, say, $500,000 and you're running at a 70% profit margin, you're making more than that $1 million business that's running at a 30% profit margin. So the second cornerstone is, let technology be your best friend, not just your friend. You want to be BFFs with technology. Nance?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, there's so many tasks nowadays. In fact, I always tell most of our clients, if there's a pain point or a bottleneck or something that you're like, oh, this is annoying because it takes me a while, I bet you there's a tool that's out there that can help you automate, you know, or free up some of your time. You know, in fact, you know, we met with Andy Cressadina, who is the writer of Content Chemistry. And I remember kind of going back and forth and having a chat on the interview we did with him. And, you know, we were asking, you know, what would you tell people who are rejecting AI and some of the AI tools? And he said, the people who are rejecting them are probably the majority of people who really need them. AI can really help you so much, and especially when it comes to productivity. And I'm not saying it's going to do all the work for you, but it is a tool that is going to help skyrocket you, you know, to do so much more. And the thing is with the advancements in technology and software and everything, there are so many solutions now for all the little hiccups that might have, you know, really kind of held us back a little bit. So let technology be your best friend, especially in the feel-good business model, because you want to run efficiently, right? You want to run it as efficiently as possible. So let's say, for example, creating content, you know, rewind maybe 7 years ago, it might have taken 10 times, 100 times more time, you know, than it takes now. Now, if I need to sit down and create an editorial calendar for the quarter, and I need to map out my launch topics and my content, if I need to write email sequences, I can use tools like ChatGPT to help me do the framework and the outline, and then I can jump in and, again, you know, add my own judge to it. I always say use AI as a brainstorming tool, not the end all be all. But literally, that speeds up the process by so much. So let technology be your friend. Please, guys, if you're listening and you're rejecting it, do not reject it. Please. It is probably one of the most impactful things that has hit us. In fact, the quote from the head of Google said that AI is probably the biggest advancement since fire for humans. Yeah.
Well, it was before we get to topic number three, just really quickly, I was on a podcast about a month or so ago with two tech professionals that were PhDs in tech and IT. And obviously, they're on the forefront of AI. Mm-hmm. And I asked them, they were interviewing me, but I asked them, I said, you know, in the world that I'm in the coaching and consulting world, there's a lot of entrepreneurs that are rejecting AI, you know, rejecting all of the technology that's going on. I said, with the background that you guys have and all the studying that you've done with the doctorates and in IT and tech and, you know, all the advancements that you know that's going on with AI, what do you feel will happen to the coaching, consulting, and entrepreneurial industries for those that do not latch on to the advancements in business? And they both said flat out, they will be out of business. 100%. And it made me think about a couple different things. Number one is the narrative that you have around certain things as business change. There have been so many things. Remember when social media, Nancy, started to come about and people are like, oh my God, you know, social media is going to ruin business. It's going to ruin everything. And there were people that rejected it, right? And there are still people today, 15 years later, that are not using social media. But think about how many businesses have advanced since social media. Same thing with email marketing. Oh, email marketing is dead. That's not going to work. That's not going to help grow your business. Well, look where that is today. So if that narrative that you have is that it's going to do more harm than good, then you're going to start to believe that. And it's actually going to hurt you more than it's going to do you good. The other thing is,
don't get left behind.
No, don't get left behind. Just lean into it. You don't have to know how to use everything. Just find that the AI that really speaks to you. And it's a tool. It's a resource. It's not the end all be all. The other thing I'll say is before we get to point number three is really make sure that you're in that growth mindset instead of that fixed mindset. The fixed mindset really talks about the fact that you're kind of comfortable where you are, you're not willing to reach outside of your comfort zone, you're playing it safe, you're okay with mediocrity. Because if you're going to tell us that you're not okay with mediocrity and you are not willing to lean into some of the new things, it becomes a contradictive statement. So if you really did have a growth mindset, you would look at all the advancements that are going on out there in business today, including AI. Now,
excited.
The third cornerstone is a small team of superstars. So Nance, I know this is something that is near and dear to our business because I can flat out tell you, we have been so blessed and lucky to have superstars on our team. And, you know, for those that don't, I mean, we never make these announcements, but we now have a COO helping us with our business and our company now, which is after 4 years of really just jamming out with everything that we're doing, we're now in the position to do that. But it wasn't always like that. But I can tell you that I'm so grateful and so thankful for every single one of our team members because they are rock stars.
Absolutely. So team is so important to me. You know, coming from a background of leading and, you know, managing and developing team, it's always just been a core, you know, a huge important focus, you know, for me. And I really feel like our team is our family. You know, I feel like, you know, even whenever I started my agency, you know, I've been working with you know, Alessandra, my right hand. I've been working with her for years at this point. And, you know, when we first met, we were both growing, you know, and it's so fun to be able to be on the same page and to really, you know, run side by side with someone. And I think really the big key here is, you know, first it was Alessandra, and then it was other design team members, and then it was copywriters, and then it was, you know, people scheduling. And, you know, again, we have a small and tight-knit team. We're not talking about like, you know, tens and 20s and 30s, you know, it's very tight-knit. And we still have weekly meetings, you know, each Monday. But it's a team of good people, right? You know, who have the same core values. You know, I'm very big about transparency, right? You know, if I need to give feedback or something wasn't right, we don't have to be weird about it, right? It's like, hey, this happened. What do you think we can do? You know, what's going well? What needs work? You know, what can we focus on? And I think it's having a respect. And I also think it's really important, right? If you put yourself in the shoes of your team, right? I want to work with people who want to grow. You know, it's like I want to learn what they want to do. And it's like, you know, if I work with, you know, let's say a copywriter, for example, and they want to grow their own business or they want to, you know, create their own thing, I want to help support them in their journey, right? Because they can help train, you know, someone to, you know, obviously replace themselves. And, you know, obviously the cycle repeats, but we want to make our team better. We don't want to keep them small. We don't want to keep them in the same place, right? We also want to help grow their, you know, what their hopes and dreams, you know, everything that they want to do. So I will just say, you know, again, the people that we work with and the team that we have built, they are people who I just, like I said, you know, I consider family. And again, I have that respect and, you know, we have that communication and there's just so much behind it. So a small team, a small and mighty team, right? You know, that's where it kind of starts is so incredibly huge. And I think really honing in, and we talk about this in the book, right? Because a lot of people are like, okay, well, as I'm growing my business, what are the first types of hires that you should make? Well, you know, of course, we're going to talk about that in our book because, right, that's a huge thing. And we had to go through that. And like Scott said, you know, we're now at the point where we have a COO, but we're at a certain level where now we hit that. And so it's like there's different responsibilities and different job descriptions. And, you know, you can take a look at the org chart and, you know, see what that all looks like. But having a small and tight-knit team is incredibly impactful.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say before we get to point number four, I remember being a part of a mastermind, God, now almost 5 years ago, almost 6 years ago at this point. And I mean, Chris Harder, who obviously is a, you know, we look up to him and his wife, Lori. They've run a great business. And I remember him saying that he believes in that superstar team aspect. And he said, he goes, look for a few thoroughbreds that really know how to run with your business. And he goes, you don't need to scale wide to scale up. He goes, if you find some really, really good people that know what they're doing, that can have your hands in with everything you're doing together, it becomes a well-oiled machine. Because you, and he, his point was, it's good to have a few people that are great at a few different things. So you don't have to have 18 people doing 18 different things. So there is a strategy, but also a key to having that small and really, really a great team of superstars. So that's number three. Number four is making sure that you really draw the line, AKA you have to set clear boundaries. And I think this is also, this is something I would say is applicable to life and business. Boundaries are so essential. Especially when you're looking to run a profitable and successful business.
Absolutely. I mean, this one was huge for me. And you know, the breakthrough that we had here and kind of the breaking point was, I remember Scott and I were still in the beginning phases as we were building our business. And Scott was still taking calls at night, on the weekends, during our dates, all kinds of things. And in fact, like it was actually
It
working
was
me up
bad.
so bad that I was actually getting sick. I was getting burnout. And I remember I had this one breakdown and I said, this cannot continue. I said, I did not stop work at my 60 plus hour a week stressful job just to roll right into something even worse, right? You know, where I could not get a break. And so I know Scott's such a workhorse. He probably would have, like, you know, 24/7, no problem. I mean, this man has unlimited batteries. But for me, I was just like, no, you know, in fact, I named my first business Work-Life Balance House Cleaning because, again, it was so important. I wanted more time. So we really laid down the line and we started setting boundaries. And again, when you're beginning your business, guys, you are going to spend a little bit more time, right? This feel good model doesn't just like, boom, magically, it's great. No, it's what we're working towards. But the thing is you've got to protect your time, because if you're not giving yourself some downtime, if you're not having a cutoff time, meaning, okay, maybe your hours of operation, you know, when you're first starting, maybe it's 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. each day. You know, maybe as you grow, you know, it kind of scales back a little and it's 11 to 4. You know, now for us, that's about what it looks like 3 days a week, 11 to 4. But you got to put the boundaries up. And if you don't have a cutoff time and if you don't have a start time, you're going to find yourself, right, stepping out of those boundaries, and you're going to be not as productive. You're going to be all over the place and you're not going to be as balanced. So make sure that you draw the line and you set clear boundaries, which is really going to help prevent the burnout. But it's also going to help, right, with this whole idea of creating a happy and healthy, you know, work and life. Right.
So the last thing I'll say before we get to the point number five is I moved my mindset from the more that I work, the more that I can earn. So there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there that are listening to this. They're like, all right, well, you know, I'm going to start working at 6 o'clock in the morning and I'm going to go till 9 o'clock at night, you know, 5 days a week, some time on the, just because you're working more doesn't mean you're more productive. And what Nancy and I have found, why we've really implemented our strategy of the 3-day work week, where we're working less and living more, is that it's made the days that we do work, which are Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, that much more productive, because we know that we have to get certain things done. Now, that is not to say that we sometimes take completely off on Wednesday and Friday. If there are projects that need to get done, now we have that flex day where there's no stress, there's no time constraints, and we could spend a couple hours working on things that we love. And here's the final thing that I'll say. You'll never work another day in your life if you love what you do. There is never a day. Now, just, you know, there are wall-kicking moments. There are frustrating times in our business. But I can flat out tell you there is not a day that goes by where Nancy and I are not grateful for our team. We are not grateful for the clients that we get to work with. We are not grateful. There's never a day that goes by where we're not grateful for what we've created and where we're going. It's a beautiful thing, and every single person could have what we have. And that brings me to our final point, number five of our cornerstones, which is your well-being is non-negotiable. Now, I did an interview on my podcast the other day. He with a really great guy, Jonathan, and he, you know, he's been through a lot, and I asked him, you know, I said, do people realize how much more productive they will be in business if they are more productive in their health and wellness? And he said, no. He said, some people just are not educated about it. And I remember that Nancy and I were listening to a podcast, and it really brought up something for me, that there are four things that people can do very low cost, if not free, to take care of yourself better. Drink plenty of water. Get at least 7 to 8 hours of sleep, work out 3 days a week, and that can be just walking around your neighborhood, and eat healthy.
Eat
and
sugar.
Literally, yeah. I mean, again, if someone was to do those four things, you'd see a huge change. So, Nance, let's talk about, you know, well-being and how that is a non-negotiable.
Yeah, just, I mean, really quick, and then we're going to kind of wrap it up. I know we've gone on a couple little, you know, but again, you can tell this is a topic we're so passionate about. But, you know, whenever it comes to health, guys, again, I've shared with you before, I've had my own health battles. You know, even whenever I'm still, you know, doing a lot of work and working for companies, I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's, hypothyroidism. I was literally, I felt like a bump on a log. You know, there were days where I feel like I couldn't get off the couch. You know, once I was diagnosed and I obviously, you know, started, you know, on treatment and I take medicine every single day now for it. Once I really focused on my health and my well-being, man, I am just so much more productive. You know, I work out every morning, right? You know, Scott and I work out for 45 minutes each day. We eat healthy. Whenever I say my entire outlook and everything changed about how I viewed food, once I realized how good eating healthy made me feel, I was eating like processed foods. I was eating stuff from cans. I was eating like, you know, just not good food that I just didn't know any better. And the more I started eating healthy, which thank you, Scott, you know, you definitely introduced, you know, a lot of nutritional and, you know, tips from that angle, because I really feel like it's not taught enough. You know, some of the basics that are no brainers, just certain things you should eat and shouldn't eat. Even sugar being one of them. When I cut sugar out of my diet, my energy levels, my feeling good, like it literally went from feeling like I was nauseous and sick every single day to feeling like, wow, what next? You know, I was ready to conquer things. I was ready to have energy towards things. So really, really important. And I know it's number five, but, you know, again, going back to the feel good business model, right? This is such a big cornerstone because your well-being is such a big priority. Okay. So Scott already mentioned, you know, we work 3 days a week. You know, we typically work on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays. We save time and we make time for our own well-being, you know, whether it be getting a massage or, you know, again, like I said, exercising, having time to meditate, having time to do those things, you know, really that are important for self-care. It's huge. It's just as important, right? You got to take care of you, because if you aren't feeling good and you aren't taking care of yourself, you're gonna be way less productive and your business is gonna be probably hurting because you're not gonna be, right, you know, as wonderful and, you know, as able to show up in the way that you really need to.
Yeah. So wrapping things up, it's about really embracing a new way of doing business, a new way of growing your business. And, you know, we just wanted to let everybody know that this feel good business model aspect, it isn't just a change in operations and how you have things set up. It's a shift in your mindset. It's the way that you're thinking about your business, going about your business. It's also really redefining what success really means to you, that work-life integration, you know, realizing that your happiness and health is paramount over everything else. And this model isn't just for the dreamers out there and the people that have big, hairy, audacious goals. It's for the doers who dare to really make sure that they are prioritizing their well-being and their wellness alongside of their business goals. So just as a reminder, if you would like to get on the wait list for our first co-authored book, The Feel Good Business Model, which drops in just about 3 weeks, March 26th, all that week, we'll be having discounted pricing. You can find the waitlist link in the description of this episode, the show notes, and the email that went out about this. So we really hope you enjoyed this episode. Love and gratitude to each and every one of you, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for checking out today's episode. If you could, please support this podcast by hopping over to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or any place that you're listening to this. Leave us a rating and review. Let us know what you loved most and what you would like to hear more of. But also, if you would like to learn how to take your business to the next level, whether it's using LinkedIn or working directly with myself and Nancy in our intimate group coaching programs, you can head over to www.thetimetogrow.com or scottaron.net to learn more. Thank you again for your support, love and gratitude, and I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.